Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Parkinson's Recovery Radio Network. I am Robert Rogers, the founder of Parkinson's Recovery in 2002. I have a exciting guest on the radio show today. Cynthia Allen is a Feldenkrais practitioner, a senior trainer in movement intelligence, and co-creator of Integral Human Gait Theory. Cynthia has been working in wellness practices, healthcare management, and organizational consultants for 35 years. In 2001, she became a certified Feldenkrais practitioner, and more recently, a senior trainer in movement intelligence. She has found Feldenkrais method and Bones for Life to be a vital part of finding personal health despite life challenges. In her private practice, she has also had the privilege of working with many individuals who currently experience the symptoms associated with a diagnosis of Parkinson's disease, helping them to move through daily life with increased ease and confidence. Cynthia, thank you so much for taking the time to be a guest on the radio show today.
Oh, thank you, Robert. I'm really pleased to be here with you. And it's exciting because, you know, we met each other like 10 years ago in Cincinnati. I think it was maybe at your first conference in person. And so to be able to be back with you here on your blog radio, talk radio blog is a thrill.
Cynthia, I must say it is a thrill for me as well. Well, could you tell us all about yourself?
Yeah, so, you know, I was raised on a farm, and we learned how to do a lot of hard work on a farm. We would just kind of like work ourselves to death, to be honest. You know, that's what farm work often was like in those days. And I'm not sure it's anything different now, but in that process of this, what many people would think of as maybe as an idyllic childhood, I had actually a lot of chronic pain, a lot of trauma. And as an adult, I really struggled with movement. I struggled with movement as a child. But as an adult, I found that the struggle just continued to get more significant over time. And so I found the Feldenkrais method. I found many things that were helpful along the way, but the Feldenkrais method I found in my 30s. And oh my gosh, it was like a miracle in my life that allowed me to find some kind of ease and to feel like I could really claim my life, not in some way that was an ideal or a perfect kind of life, but could utilize the body, the mind that I had been given to have a pretty comfortable way of being and to be able to navigate life's challenges better. So I was pretty interested. Once I got exposed to the Feldenkrais work and I started training in it, I was pretty interested in it for not only for myself, but then for clients. But then, you know, it's been a few years now, and we have our first puppy. Well, he's really already 3 and a half to us. He's still a puppy, and his name is Darby. And so I'm 62 when I got this dog for the first dog. So, you know, kind of a little bit late in life to decide, hey, let's go for a puppy. And unfortunately, Darby ran out in front of a car and got hit about 5 months ago and crushed the side of his pelvis. And we had surgery for him to reconstruct his pelvis. And I have been watching Darby's stages of healing and how he, how things come back online through his own curious explorations, through when he feels a little bit better, right? Through the explorations that I do with him with my Feldenkrais background, trying to adapt it to a dog. And I see how big a deal, again, all over again, I see like how big a deal it is when a being feels better on a particular day and when they don't feel better. And when they suddenly feel some strength and like they can count on that, and for his case, his back left leg, or when he can't count on it. And so it's kind of renewed my passion for making sure that people can make the most out of this, you know, this unique life that we are each given.
Cynthia, what are three important keys in working through movement roadblocks that Parkinson's disease might bring about?
Yes. So, you know, when we're knocked down, if we're really ill, some of these things kind of come to us naturally. If we're really knocked down, like my dog Darby, really knocked down. And all he could do was lay around and whimper for a long time. He just could whimper. But then one day he has enough energy to just kind of do a little woof. Woof. That's what he could do. Woof, right? Now, when we have something that's chronic, that's more like an ongoing thing, like Parkinson's, sometimes we start trying really hard to push ourselves. And what I've really noticed is that Darby doesn't so much push himself. I mean, sometimes he tries things that he thought he could do and it turns out he can't really do them. But he doesn't like keep trying to do the thing. He doesn't try to push himself beyond really what he feels he's capable of doing. So one of the things that I really have used as a key in my work that is something I call respecting yourself. So it's respecting where you're at today, where you're at in this given moment. It's respecting that you can get better or do maybe more tomorrow, but maybe less today. It's really understanding your own skeletal and neurological organization and being able to stay and work with it instead of giving ourselves messages that are really negative or that reinforce for us a kind of sense of lack instead of a sense of capacity or capability. So it really starts with this first one, respecting yourself. Now, of course, somebody that has a diagnosis of Parkinson's may also have many other things going on. Maybe they also need a knee replacement, or maybe they fell and broke an ankle when they were young, and so that ankle acts up, or maybe they have pain in their shoulder that has maybe nothing at all to do with Parkinson's, right? So this respecting yourself includes your history. It includes your values about yourself as well as what might be going on with you in this musculoskeletal way. Then right behind that key, another one that I feel is really important is learning to slow down and take time. Now, this could be a toughie for somebody with a neurological challenge because sometimes we feel like we already move so slow or we just takes too long to do things. But the funny thing about many of the kinds of neurological symptoms that get in people's way is that the harder they try, the worse those symptoms will get. So there is this quality of learning to slow down. Don't worry about the speed at which you're doing the movement. Try to just be in the moment and let the movement unfold at whatever speed that it's unfolding at. And this slowing down then really allows a person to begin to feel and sense how the movement is unfolding inside themselves and make better decisions around, well, if I made a slight little adjustment, would this movement go simpler? Would it go easier? So that's a really important one. And when you slow down and take time, this thing called curiosity can emerge. And then we can become more curious about the process of the movement as opposed to the goal of the movement. Now, of course, I'm making it sound simple, and it's not simple. If it was simple, I probably wouldn't still be in the method. It takes time, and it unfolds over a lifetime to learn this process of attending to yourself, of being with yourself, so that awareness and curiosity and options can unfold. But it's very worthwhile. It's extremely, extremely worthwhile, so that often something that was very undoable can suddenly become doable. So those are probably the two that I feel are the most important for someone with Parkinson's and for most everybody too. Sometimes we have to realize that the things that are important for other people are important for just about everybody. And these are keys that I use with all of my clients. But I think they're particularly important when you have a neurological challenge. And then there's another one, which is to bring movement experiments in that are unique so that it really lights up the brain and the nervous system. And they says, hey, that's interesting. And that they have a real sticky factor to them. So that means that the brain goes, not only is it a new sensation and something that grabs my attention and it feels safe and I might like to explore it a little bit more, but the brain can feel and sense that it has functional value. So I'm very interested in improving the functionality of reaching, of standing up from a chair, of sitting down from a chair, of walking, of shaking someone's hands, of being able to smile, of being able to chew, this kind of functional movement that the brain is always looking to upgrade, even if you don't realize it. Your brain is in the background going, hey, what can I do? What can happen for this being me right now in this moment that would improve my balance, that would improve my ability to bring food to my mouth, that would improve my ability to walk over to somebody else or to back away from somebody else. These are things that are really, I call it unique but meaningful stimulation, which is really what the Feldenkrais work is about. It's how do we bring this unique but meaningful stimulation into a person's life so that they can re-examine movement in a way that's interesting and feels good and opens possibilities, as opposed to, oh, there's another thing I can't do. Or, I'll leave it there. I'll leave it there.
You are listening to the Parkinson's Recovery Radio Network. My guest today is Cynthia Allen, a Feldenkrais practitioner. Cynthia, what movement modalities have you used with clients who happen to currently experience Parkinson's symptoms?
The two most common movement modalities that I use are the Feldenkrais method, which is awareness through movement. So guiding people, verbally guiding people through movement. And I would be very pleased to give people, your listeners, some movement experiences here today. And then the other one is a work called Bones for Life. Now, that work deals a little bit more with posture, which is a biggie for people with Parkinson's. It deals a little bit more with feeling yourself upright and able to walk in gravity. So I find that both of the works can be really nice. The Feldenkrais awareness through movement is sometimes feels like more of an interior work. And I think Bones for Life, especially where I've gotten to use it with people with Parkinson's in groups, can have a really nice interactive feel to it and be really enjoyable because of the interactiveness. Both works are part of somatic movement, somatic education, which means this ability to learn from the inside out. So we want to restore or reconnect with that capacity that we had as babies to learn about movement from the inside out. I know that many of the approaches for Parkinson's is going to be about stretching or building strength or taking really big steps. I'm not saying that those things might not be helpful, but they're not often that enjoyable. And so in somatic education, you can really awaken people's sensory world to enjoy their body as they explore the possibilities. In that learning from the inside out, there's no judgment. You experience what you experience, and you are not trying for something super specific. Instead, you're following the instructions the best that you know how to interpret them for while respecting yourself, while going slow and taking time. And then you're also being coached on, well, how did you actually do that movement? So, for example, if I ask listeners right now to bring their hand up to their mouth, and we'll give them a moment to do that, and you can take a moment, too, to do that, Robert, to bring your hand to the mouth. That seems like a straightforward movement. Now, of course, if you have trouble doing it, you know it's not straightforward. For someone who doesn't have trouble, they're like, okay, Cynthia, I did that. I brought my hand to my mouth. But it turns out there's like a lot of different ways to organize that simple movement. So, for example, some people, when they go to bring their hand to their mouth, they lift their elbow and their shoulder out to the side, and then they bring their hand up, but their elbow will be out to the side. Huh. Maybe that was you. Other people will bring their fingertips. They'll be sensing their fingertips, and they'll be bringing their fingertips towards their mouth. And as they do that, their elbow will drop and kind of go in towards the midline of their body. So it's really these two different ways, and there's more than that, of course. There's more, always more. These two different ways have very different results in muscular effort or in wear and tear on joints I'll just stay with joints. So we can always break down a movement and experience it through different hints and ideas in new ways that then allows the person with Parkinson's to not only practice that, they could practice it, but also spontaneously begin to find a carryover into their daily life.
I know that listeners would love to be able to have an actual experience for the couple of movement modalities that you've now discussed. Perhaps something useful that listeners can do right now?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, absolutely. So I'd like to introduce first something that if you have one hand that is relatively comfortable and easy to work with, or I wouldn't choose the hand that's the stiffest for now. I would choose the one that was a little bit less stiff, if there's any stiffness in the hand. And if the hands could be resting on your lap, or if you're in a recliner on your lap or your chest, or if you're lying down listening, they can be lying beside you. It doesn't really matter as long as the hands are really in a comfortable position. And then as you hear what I'm talking about, you might change what you're going to do. So select that hand. And we're going to just begin to create a possibility of a general quieting in the nervous system, because shaking, quivering, clenching, fear of falling, these are all things that come oftentimes with this diagnosis or with the diagnosis and or the medication or combinations thereof. So you've selected the hand that you want to explore with, and just let it be lightly open to begin with, just lightly open, whatever it means to you. You don't need to stretch out your fingers. Just let it soften and be a little bit open. And you can look at it perhaps. If it's easy for you to look down at it, great. If it's not, just feel in the hand. Feel into each of the five fingers, the thumb, the index finger, the middle finger, the fourth finger, the fifth finger. And then let's do that again, but feel into the ball that goes with each of those fingers. So there's a ball to the hand, just like there's a ball to your foot. And really, there's like five ball joints. So feel into the ball, That's thumb. Deep in the hand, that's where the thumb is connecting. Feel into the ball that goes with the thumb. Feel into the ball that goes with the index finger. The ball that goes with the middle finger. The ball that goes with the fourth finger. And the ball that goes with the fifth finger. Now we could imagine perhaps a line going from each fingertip through the ball joint into the center of the hand. They could somehow almost all intersect into the middle of the hand. And so we've mapped out now sort of like the fingers, the ball, a little bit the center of the hand. And now we can think about the heel of the hand. And the heel of the hand is actually made up of a couple more areas that kind of look like balls, right? They kind of, the thumb is a kind of pretty big ball. And then there's the pad on the outside edge of the bottom of the hand where it meets the wrist. And again, all this is connected. All the parts of the hand are connected by the center of the hand. So we're really going to start to focus on the center of the hand. Focus in sensation or focus in your light attention with your eyes. Some people might even be able to imagine that there's a center in the hand that breathes. Of course, there isn't any there in the center of the hand. But if you can indulge me and indulge yourself, I think you'll find it useful to begin to wonder every time you breathe in, does the center of the hand sort of breathe in? And every time that you breathe out, does the center of the hand sort of breathe out? And so it begins to open the center of the hand and close the center of the hand. Now, it can be very metaphorical. It doesn't have to be an actual opening in that center. And yet for some people, they might find that there is the barest hint that when they breathe in, it's like as if the center of the hand moves forward in space. And then when they breathe out, it's as if the center of the hand retracts a little bit. And of course, these fingers are connected. So whether or not it's just this movement at the level of imagination, or there is a tiny little bit of pulsing that somebody else might be able to observe. It's going to be so small, probably not. The fingertips are attached, so therefore they might start to come just barely towards each other and then just barely away from each other. Now, I'm just going to space my words out a little bit more with a little bit of a gap here so that you could begin to really attend to this idea of this retraction in the middle as you breathe out and this expansion in the middle as you breathe in. And you don't need to hear too many words from me. You just have whatever your normal rhythm of your breath is. You don't have to make your breath deep. You don't have to change your breathing. It may happen that your breathing will begin to change all on its own. And as you do just a few more of these movements, you may begin to feel a general sort of softening, a relaxing, maybe in the chest, maybe around the mouth, in your belly, maybe in your other hand, or your feet, or your neck. So this is a kind of movement. You can continue to do that if you enjoy it, or you can begin to let it go. So this is a kind of unique but meaningful movement to the basics of breathing that starts to create a safety that generalizes through the whole nervous system and says, ah, I'm okay. I'm okay. And oftentimes, as people explore very gently, very softly, with no ambition to stop, say, a little bit of quiver or shaking, it does stop. It becomes less. That's not the goal. As soon as we make that the goal, we've now started to add tension back into the system. We don't want to do that. So it's really about just bringing that kind of experiment into your day, maybe a few minutes here or there, and seeing what happens. So that's an example of something that we like to generally often begin with, which is how can we create a kind of quietness, or we could also say a receptiveness in the nervous system to learn new information. And I'll pause there, Robert, and let you see if you want to comment or follow up on that before we go on.
Cynthia, I must report that I was experiencing all of that as you were leading us through it. I am totally relaxed now. You said, okay, Robert, you know, if you'd like to have a follow-up, said, oh, boy, I'm really relaxed. I don't know if I can say anything at all. Anyway, it's quite amazing how that can really calm the nervous system. I'm really awed by what a simple kind of a set of instructions can do for our being able to settle down this active nervous system.
Mm. Yes, and it's so important. It's just so important. Really, it's important for us all, but it becomes more important when we have that sort of that feeling, that general angst of not being able to rely on our body the way that we want to be able to, we feel we should be able to. So having something simple is very, very valuable. Now, I know that some people struggle with having a very stiff face. And so there is something very interesting from Bones for Life, which is called walking on the roots of the teeth. And if you have a hand that you can just bring up and feel into the bottom teeth, just feel lightly, like, oh, there's the bottom tooth. There's the bottom tooth, kind of a tooth or two that you can feel into. And then you lower your fingers down below that. So the roots of the teeth go into the jawbone itself. Okay, so just maybe just a little bit go, I don't think I ever realized. I've never thought about it. I mean, I know I have the dentist who says, hey, I pulled this too. Look at this long root. I never thought about, hey, where in my jaw is the roots of my own teeth? Then let's say that you take your right hand, just bring your right hand up and look at it from a side profile so that if you have your fingers lightly extended towards the ceiling, it's like you turn the skinny side of your hand towards your face so you see the thumb. And that means the little finger side is turned away from you. And then use the index finger to sort of wrap around the top of the thumb a little bit. So you create this kind of funky little frame around your thumbnail with the index finger, and then you can just lightly fold the other fingers in. The other fingers are actually not that important here. And we'll do just the one hand first, and then we'll add the other hand in. So you can see that there is, if you look at it, you're like, oh, yep, there's my thumbnail. There's the flat side of my index. We're going to think of that as like a unit. And you're going to bring that flat side of the index finger and the thumbnail onto the root, onto one of the roots or into the roots of your teeth. So, and you're going to just let it rest there for a moment, find just a place. And then the next time that you feel yourself just easily breathing out, just make a little bit of pressure into the root of that tooth. Jam hard. Be very respectful. It's like enough that you go, oh, I feel the boniness there, but not so much that you feel like you're pushing your skull back. Now, do that a couple of times, let's say on the right side of your lower jaw. Maybe move it around two or three times. You do it very slowly and gently again, just like we did that hand movement. So it's a very easy, gentle breath out with a nice, long, sustained press, and then a nice, long, sustained release as you breathe in. Now you can rest the right hand for a moment and do the same thing with your left hand. So again, you would look at your left hand. You look at the skinny side of it so that the thumb is facing you. And then your fingers are kind of extended towards the ceiling. The thumb's kind of extended towards the ceiling. You take that index finger and you just sort of bend the knuckle over top thumb. So you just have a nice little cap, sort of like your index finger made a cap for your thumb. And you let the other fingers bend. And you bring down this left thumbnail and the side of that index finger to the left side of the jaw, but thinking about the roots of the teeth. It's not way down on the jaw. It's down in the jaw where you think of the root of the teeth being. Breathing out, you slightly press. And breathing in, you slightly release. Good. So you do two or three of that. So now we can do it with both hands at the same time, but we're going to do it in a walking rhythm. And the walking rhythm is really important to be getting used to because it's the rhythm that we need for walking. So we can actually use a kind of walking rhythm on the roots of our teeth so that we begin to press first on the breath out with the right one, and as it's releasing, we're pressing then with the left one. So we will no longer be so timed to the breath because we're going to be doing walking rhythm. So start with the breath out, but as you're releasing the right on the breath in, already the left is starting to press. You begin to walk on the roots of your teeth. And you can walk around from the middle of the lower jaw through the sides of the lower jaw, and then you can come up and do the upper jaw. Now, I didn't ask you to notice the sensations and the feeling in your jaw before we started. I have to say, I don't often get to teach like this where I don't see anybody and nobody sees me, so I feel just a slight bit off my rhythm. But as you do that walking around, when you come to rest here in a minute, even though I didn't ask you to notice how the tissues of your jaw and your face felt before, I think you're going to notice, huh, they somehow feel different. So walk left, right rhythm, right, left rhythm. Walk around on the roots of the teeth. And you can make it very, very slow. If you want to speed it up a little bit, you can speed it up a little bit, but don't make it harsh. Don't make it hard. And then let that slowly come to a pause. Let your hands slowly come down. Let your hands relax on your lap or on a surface just to really release. Take the time to invite a breath back into the center of each hand so that any tension you might have been holding just gradually lessens. And then notice for a few moments, like, what are the tissues? What tells you that you've been working with the tissues of your face and the roots of your teeth? Some kind of sensation there. Some kind of maybe aliveness, maybe it feels like warmth or circulation, Maybe the tissues feel like they've gotten softer and more relaxed. Maybe it would feel a little bit easier to smile. Just a little bit. And Robert, how was that for you?
Oh, it was delightful, Cynthia. Absolutely delightful. So is your
experience... You'll be having me back on a regular... You'll be having me back on a regular basis, won't you?
That's right. Every week, are you available? And working with persons that have that kind of mask face where there's just the difficulty of being able to have any expressions, is your experience of doing something as simple as what we just processed through is helpful to be able to make more flexible expressions?
It is my experience. Yes, it is. I think the one thing that is important to say that it's not the kinds of things that I do generally. You don't do them once and then you never have the problem again. That's not the kind of way that we explore, but it gives people some simple ways to reinvite another place, another state. So one of the challenges in neuroplasticity is that the brain gets better at doing what it does a lot of. It can also, one of the wonderful things about neuroplasticity is that if you want to interrupt what you've always done and you give it unique, meaningful stimulation that's full of respect and curiosity and you give yourself the time to process, you begin to lay down a new roadmap, a new set of breadcrumbs, if you will, to being able to access more relaxed, a more relaxed face, a more ability to have more expression. So it's not something that's one and done, but it is a way that one can work with themselves. And I think it's a really simple way that one can work with themselves and a pleasant way to work with themselves that doesn't create a kind of internal tug of war, but just really comes back again to this learning from the inside out. Now, some people are listening and they're saying, gosh, these seem like really simple. What I want to work with is my ability to walk. I want to be able to walk better. Or I want to be able to stand up better. So anyone who's sitting in a chair, if they could sit at the front of their chair, I think that for the purposes of this show, perhaps might be this time together, is a good investment in standing and walking is just really essential pelvic function. So as one sits at the front of a chair, they might be, especially if it's a firmer chair, and hopefully nobody's sitting on a roller chair because that's very unstable and can really scare you when you start to make movements if you are on a chair with rollers. So people need some solid chairs to work on that aren't overly cushioned for this kind of thing. So maybe you don't have that with you right now, but maybe you have a dining room chair or a folding chair somewhere in the house and you could replay this later and work with it. But as you sit at the front of the chair where your thighs are not so much on the chair, mostly just your bottom and maybe just a little bit of the upper thigh, you can feel, first of all, what's the challenge of sitting there? Does it feel like, oh man, my head is really pulling my spine down and forward. I'm really, the head feels really heavy. Or maybe your head feels back in space. Maybe you feel really upright. Maybe you feel really rounded. Maybe you feel extended, like you're pushed forward in the chest. So whatever you feel, let's see if we can play with it and maybe even bring it into a state of feeling better in some way. Maybe you feel okay already, but you could feel better. Maybe you feel like this is a lot of work, and let's see if we can do something with that. We also want to kind of notice the sitting bones on the chair. So these become, when you're in the sitting position, those sitting bones become like your feet. You're going to balance on your sitting bones more than you are on your feet. So on the chair, the sitting bones are your feet on the chair. And usually we are more weighted on one sitting bone or the other. And you can wiggle yourself a little left and right to go, what are she talking about? Is there something bony in my bottom? Oh, yeah. Usually people can feel it. They wiggle around a little bit. So just notice if one is a little heavier than the other. And then you might also notice your feet on the ground. One might feel heavier than the other. So let's just begin then to explore some pelvic movements, and let's notice how it changes things afterwards. So just begin to do a little bit of sinking back on your tailbone, almost letting your tail round a little bit under, and your low back rounds a little towards the back of the chair. And then reverse that movement. And let's just do that two or three times, a gentle sinking back so that you feel that the area of the waistband goes a little bit back in space, and then you come back to where you started. Now, sometimes we think to ourselves, I don't want to do that. I'm already rounded. Why would I do more of it? But we don't want to fight. We don't want to fight a posture. Excuse me. We don't want to fight a posture. We want to invite something else. So sometimes it's helpful to exaggerate what's already there, just a little gentle rounding back, and then coming back to what was neutral for you. Now, this next time when you round back, can you let more of your body respond to that? Like, oh, there's my chest. It could become softer. My head could come down a little bit. And also feel how your pubic bone in front is changing its angle. You're not just changing the shape across the back of yourself. You change the shape across the front of yourself, too. And we want to invite more of the spine, as long as it's comfortable. If it's not comfortable, don't do it. We want to invite more of the spine to be involved. It's kind of like letting all the air out. It's just like, oh, deflating. Now, this next time when we come up, we're going to think about air filling us. Like air, almost like someone brings helium into our body. And somehow or another, our torso helium starts to make us lighter, 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 lighter as we come back. Lighter, lighter, lighter. We can feel the expansion that this air inside gives us. And we come back up and maybe we keep going and we find that, oh, our chest is opening a little bit and our head is looking a little bit up the wall just a little bit and our shoulder blades are dropping a little bit behind. We're not trying to make anything happen. These are just hints of things you can notice. And then the air comes out. Let the air come out. It just somehow out. As we get soft and we round back and we slump. It's like a quality slump. Nothing wrong with a quality slump or a quality slouch. And then this imaginary air come into us. We'll feel how we're rising up because of the air. The spine is uncurving, right? It's coming up to a point where it feels a little more straight. And we're rocking on those rocker bones, those sitting bones. And then with the air, the helium comes into the chest a little bit more. We'll raise up our chest, our head and our eyes, just a little bit up the wall, the sky, the ceiling. Not much, not much. And then this time, instead of letting all the air out, just let a little bit of air out until it feels like, oh, I think like right there, I feel somewhat balanced. Yeah. And the head will be in a different position. You'll feel a little bit maybe lighter, like your head isn't so heavy. Like the head has got helium in it. In fact, adding that image that the head has some helium in it that helps it to find the sky. Like it wants to float off. Can be useful. Now, anyone who feels like they can do this right now and still listen could then decide to come up to stand. Standing's available to you. and feel what it's like in standing. And this pelvic, this freedom of this pelvis is so important in walking. It's not that you rock forward and back in this big way, but there are these minute movements of the pelvis that are happening in walking that power our legs, that help to move our legs forward and backward and to the sides. So very, very important what's going on around the pelvic area in walking and in making a leg light to move forward and keeping our balance. So there's another movement exploration for all of you that I think will serve you well.
Cynthia, I know a number of listeners would love to be able to get private guided sessions with you. How might they go about scheduling that? As I understand it, you do long distance sessions for people who might live not in Cincinnati, but in Alaska or Hawaii or Great Britain or wherever.
Yeah, I teach group online sessions. So I don't do private sessions at this point in my life. I'm not able to do that, but I teach online sessions. And I have there's all kinds of options. If you go to futurelifenow.com and start looking around, there's all kinds of options for where you can put yourself on wait lists for next programs that will be starting up. We have a membership called Your Learning Body. And I find that this is a really great place for many people to be, because then in relatively small groups, we can get to know each other. And I teach regular classes there and give people access to a library of lessons. And they can actually form community groups together as well, which have been going really fabulous. But there's also other options in Bones for Life with Bones for Life classes, and check out futurelifenow.com and look around and see what you might find that would be interesting for you.
That website address again is the three words joined together, futurelifenow.com. So that's spelled FUTURELIFENOW.COM. Cynthia Allen, as people are reflecting back on this really quite motivational and inspirational presentation from you today, what would you like them to most remember?
Well, I think it may not be, I think maybe it's most what I would most like to communicate to all of us is that life is a continual and changing, unfolding process. And what is difficult today does not, or even in this moment, does not necessarily have to be difficult 5 minutes from now or tomorrow. And I hope that in the movement explorations, people experienced some kind of freedom that might seem odd because it wasn't really hard work, right? It wasn't big exercise. And I'm not saying that people don't need to get out and move in bigger ways, but there is a kind of freedom that can come from not trying so hard sometimes and from just being present and respectful and curious. Who knows what might unfold?
Cynthia Allen, from the bottom of my heart and speaking for the thousands of listeners of Parkinson's Recovery Radio, I want to thank you so much for providing this inspirational guide as to what we can do to be able to get to know our bodies better and to be able to move more effortlessly without having to strain ourselves. So thanks so much for taking the time to be a guest on the show.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you.
And that's what's happening here on the shores of the, you guessed it, Puget Sound, where all the women are smart, all the men are, of course, handsome, and all the children are profoundly loved. Know that by virtue of the fact you have been listening to this quite inspirational and remarkable presentation by Feldenkrais practitioner Cynthia Allen, that you indeed are traveling down the road to recovery in your own way, using your own guidance, and you are experiencing a successful journey one way or another. Thanks so much for being a participant and a member of the Parkinson's Recovery audience. May you have a spectacular week.